trying not to look like she was 1,000 miles away. If she wasted this highlight opportunity, her father would kill her. She decided to tease out her hair on the way to the back of the line, blowing a kiss to a glowering Moses. The alphas were insanely competitive. She wanted to ignore the messages she had received, but she couldn't. So she tried to quietly weigh her options as they played, the boys growing more boisterous with every passing minute, throwing taunts and jibes at each other. Sato pulled out the carrot at one point, biting off the end before tossing it to the ground. And then clothes really began to come off, and she started to feel the buzz of the alcohol. Theodore was first, flashing his broad, strong back as he pulled his shirt over his head. "Don't be intimidated," he taunted Moses. "There always has to be a bigger twin." Moses looked like he couldn't roll his eyes any harder if he tried. He tore his shirt off, revealing a torso as perfectly muscled as Theodore's, but littered with scars. Isabel took one of her earrings off, earning a laugh from Killian and a few narrow-eyed looks from the other line. Reed removed the reading glasses that had been tucked into his pocket. Killian removed his shirt, and Wallace skipped the headband, necklace, or earrings she could have taken off, whipping away her shirt instead. She walked confidently to the back of the line, brushing her hand against Theodore's chest as she passed, her purple satin bra glinting obnoxiously. Isabel fought the rush of acid that spilled onto her tongue, swallowing it down with another large gulp of whatever drink Theodore had made for her. It tasted like whiskey, so maybe she shouldn't have been drinking it so fast. She admired girls who were as confident as Wallace, but something about Wallace touching Theodore didn't sit right. Not when Moses had forced Isabel to think about the other girl breaking into Theodore's room and molesting him. Not when she thought about the fact that Wallace had done exactly that to Sato. Spade's shirt came off next, and he folded it neatly on his way to the back of the line, looking like the whole game was a huge inconvenience to him for the simple fact that he had to place his clothes on the floor. Isabel decided to help him out, probably because she was tipsy, as he stared distastefully at the next spot in the line of items. She picked up Theodore's shirt, dropping it into the other line. Spade immediately placed his shirt on top of Theodore's, but then stopped before her, holding his hand out.
"First rule of playing with alphas," he said softly. "Kindness will get you killed. No cheating, puppy."
She frowned at his hand.
"What do you want?"
Instead of answering, he tugged at the strap of her handbag, pulling it over her head. He placed it in the line where Theodore's shirt had been and took his place behind Reed, who was staring at Spade's hand like he expected it to burst into fire from touching her. She blew out an annoyed breath, glaring at Spade as the line moved on. James and Ellis both decided to follow Wallace's lead, taking their shirts off, and Isabel found herself looking to the guys for a reaction. Theodore, Moses, and Killian didn't seem to be watching, almost like they were being gentlemanly, though it was hard to think of Moses as gentlemanly. Reed and Spade were just straight-up disinterested. Ashford and Nico didn't turn away, but there wasn't any interest in their eyes. Sato stared at the fallen clothing like the whole game disgusted him, and it made her curious as to why he was even there. She found herself forgetting the phone that had been burning a hole in her pocket the whole time as she realized she was standing between Killian and Theodore, both shirtless, both edging a little closer to her to move away from the girls either side of them. The heat of their bodies, the soft roll of their power, the combination of their scents mixing together, the whiskey on her tongue. It was a sensual ocean she could drown in if she didn't actively keep her head above it all. Theodore's sweet amber was the perfect earthy companion to Killian's citrus and floral bergamot, both scents lighter than usual, more cloying, a perfume that thickened with every brush of their bare skin against her arms, chest or back, as she huddled between them. When Sato practically tore his shirt off, a scowl firmly fixed to his lips, she found herself backing into Killian, seeking comfort from the black gaze that tunneled into her. Killian's hands landed on her hips, and Sato's eyes flicked down, narrowing slightly before he dropped his shirt into the line.
"I'm here, baby."
Killian's voice was soft against her temple, his grip tightening somewhat as a shiver traveled through her body. He was trying to comfort her, but it was having the opposite effect, winding her up even tighter. She was struggling to breathe evenly when Theodore's hands moved somewhere near his groin and the sound of a zipper speared the room. He chuckled, his arm jerked, and then he turned around, flashing a torn-off button as he held his pants together with his other hand. He was smirking in a victorious way, but when her eyes flicked down his corded forearm to where he was holding the top of his pants in his fist before darting back up again, the amusement seemed to have fled. His eyes flashed, and his chest expanded on a deep breath before he forced the smile back into place.
"Would your team stop fucking cheating?" Moses growled, glaring at Theodore's back as he slipped off a dark metal ring and stalked toward the back of the line.
Isabel stepped forward, glancing toward Reed, who had taken Moses's place. He was assessing her quietly, reading her face like he already knew that she had nothing but her dress left to take off. She played with the hem, chewing on her lip. She could feel so many eyes, and a quick sweep of the line showed that they were all watching and waiting, their attention heavy, like this was another test. But they weren't just watching her. They were watching Reed, like they expected him to forfeit then and there. Theodore and Killian were actually glaring at him. Nico didn't look happy either. Her attention returned to Reed, whose lips twitched in amusement. He cocked a brow, almost like an actual question.
"Do I look like I'm about to forfeit?" "All at once, puppy."
Spade's words drew her attention and made Reed's smile almost twitch into full effect. She stopped playing with the hem of her dress and pushed her fingers beneath it, finding the waistband of her panties. She rolled them down her legs and balled them into a fist. She walked to Spade, giving him plenty of time to stop her as she reached for his pocket. "First rule of playing with Sigmas," she muttered, pushing her panties into his pocket. "Never underestimate your opponent." She was being petty. She knew how particular he was, how much he was triggered by hygiene. He was probably having an actual aneurysm knowing what was in his pocket as she withdrew her hand. James choked on an astounded laugh. Ellis looked mildly impressed. Wallace was staring at Isabel like she had grown a whole other head. And the others... Something had shifted. An insidious energy was leaking into the room like a slow fog, raising the hairs on her arms. Their faces were so blank, even Spade's. It was impossible to tell where it was coming from, but it froze her to the spot. The other girls picked up on it a little late, but they still realized at some point.
Do you have my phone?" Wallace stage whispered. "I think we should go."
Isabel pointed to her handbag on the floor.
"In there."
Wallace edged toward it, but she wasn't moving fast enough because Sato barked,
"Leave. Now."
"Wow."
Isabel forced a laugh from her throat as the other girls scrambled to escape the dorm after Wallace retrieved her phone.
"You guys really hate losing, huh?"
She bent to retrieve her items from the floor, but Killian caught her shoulder, shaking his head at her. He didn't say anything else, and she straightened, her frown bouncing between them.
"You've been drinking,"
Theodore explained, his voice rough. He shifted his attention to the glass wall, probably watching through the intermittent flashes of lightning as the other girls ran away.
"You'll have to stay here tonight."
"I'm not driving back to the dorm."
she groaned.
I can walk just fine.
And she still had to find a way to ruin Wallace's life while dealing with the messages on her phone.
And I've got stuff to do.
You've had one win tonight. Don't get greedy,
Reed advised, his jaw tense.
Stop patronizing me,
she growled, whirling on him.
Then?
He stepped up to her, glaring down at her.
Think it through, Sigma. This bond is something new, something we haven't seen before, right? So how do you know that completing it will work the same way?
She frowned, trying to sort through her muddled mind to figure out what he was trying to say and why he was suddenly saying it now. The anchor permanently marked the tether to complete a mate bond, but her mate still hadn't appeared. So that meant she could also complete it without them?
For fuck's sake!
She threw up her hands.
I'm a little drunk. I'm not going to get in an accident and scar myself permanently by walking home.
A little drunk?
Killian asked, quickly picking her up before she backed into a coffee table. Light flashed through the room, and she met his eyes, her own widening.
Uh-oh,
she said, as the room started to slip away. The cat-like yellow-green of Killian's alarmed stare transformed into deep blue with uneven black splotches. A face full of scars, a hard mouth parting in shock. She was sprawled ungracefully onto Easton's lap, a call tone chirping from the laptop on his desk and a slew of curses tripping from his lips. He rolled his chair back and shoved her down, pushing forward just as the call tone stopped and a woman's voice filled the office.
I thought you were going to call at 9.
She had a husky voice, textured, pretty, angry.
Why are you still in your office?
The boys are having a party.
Easton's words were clipped. Isabel was trapped beneath the desk, her whole body struck with shock and a heavy wave of dizziness. Maybe she was drunk. The alcohol seemed to have knocked her off course from her usual teleporting spot.
The party broke up?
The woman asked. She sounded politely interested now, but there was an edge to her voice.
Some of them came inside,
Easton replied, sucking in a breath as Isabel tried to shift beneath the desk. He rolled forward further, his hand landing on her head, his fingers tunneling roughly into her hair, holding her in place against his thigh, the tension in his grip unmistakable.
Don't move.
She clutched his leg in shock, biting back a whimper. His leg was like stone, carved in hard lines of tight tension.
Yes, that's what I'm referring to.
The woman was a little impatient now.
The girls left, except Kane's little girlfriend. Sounds like she teleported to the fire trail again.
The woman was an official.
Ah.
That was Easton's only response.
Will you visit tonight?
The official's voice turned silky, lowering to a purr.
Or do you want to play a game?
Easton's fingers flexed, sending a jolt of sensation through Isabel's skull and down her spine. It tingled through the length of her folded legs, resembling anxiety or fear. But it wasn't a great resemblance. More like a tacky imitation. His grip on her hair was unyielding, his body coiled with tension, but it wasn't anger battering against her chest in waves. The emotions rolled over each other too quickly to properly identify, but it was clear he was uncomfortable, ticking down the seconds until he could release her. He wasn't mad at her, but alarmed at the situation, reacting on instinct.
I'll visit,
he said.
Are you sure?
The official's husky chuckle seemed to impossibly ratchet up the tension in Easton's body, but he was saved from an answer by a loud knock on his office door. He swore, his breath sawing out before he raised his voice.
What? We've got a problem,
Theodore announced, opening the door.
Isabel, teleported to the fire trail again.
Easton swiftly interrupted. I know. I should go and deal with this, Tilda. I'll see you later.
Why do you need to deal with it?
Tilda returned, the sensual edge to her tone ripped away. Isabel could move her head just enough to see through the gap in the backboard of the desk to where Theodore was backing out of the office and closing the door again.
Because Theo is about to march out into a fucking storm to go looking for her.
Easton worked to get his tone under control, letting the roughness bleed out of it.
I have to keep my alphas under control. I'll see you later.
He slammed the laptop shut with his left hand, his right hand releasing her instantly. He jerked his chair back, staring down at her in shock.
Are you okay?
He was rubbing the thigh she had been leaning against agitatedly.
Did I hurt you?
No, she lied, too shocked to move. He held out a hand, and she just stared at it.
Please don't stay down there.
His jaw was tight, his tone shaky, his discomfort still rolling over her. She placed her hand in his, and he pulled her up, standing from his seat.
Are you sure I didn't hurt you?
He asked as she wobbled on the spot, his gaze tracing over her hair.
It would have been bad if she had seen you.
I know, Isabel blurted. About the storm. She pointed to the window. Easton frowned, falling back into his seat. His eyes narrowed, examining her face, before he motioned to one of the chairs on the other side of his desk.
Do you want to sit down?
She perched her butt on the edge of his desk, remembering a little too late that she wasn't wearing any underwear. Easton leveled her with a cold expression.
On a chair, Carter.
Right. She popped off the desk and fell into one of the chairs, having enough foresight to close her legs. He rolled forward, folding his arms across the desk.
What do you mean you know about the storm?
I know it's you, she said plainly. I know you have an illegal ability. It's not just Theodore and Moses. I don't even think it's just the three of you. I think Sato has one too. Her statement was met with silence, and then he stood, rounding the desk. He leaned against the other side, towering over her with his arms crossed, his eyes guarded as he considered her.
Is that so?
He asked quietly. She wanted to bang her head on the desk. Why did she say any of that?
I'm not an anti-loyalist,
she hurried out, glancing to the door. But I won't tell anyone. He scoffed.
No shit, Carter. If we thought you were going to tell anyone.
He let the rest hang in the air between them. Not quite a threat, but the suggestion of one, if she chose to take it that way.
Then why have they been following me?
She demanded, pointing at the door.
Accidents happen.
Easton unfolded, standing tall again.
Like right now. Students get drunk and run their fucking mouths.
I'm not like that.
Then why aren't you wearing underwear?
The question was so sudden, so unexpected, she was left sitting there with her mouth open. She glanced down at herself, frowning.
How can you tell?
You sat on my desk.
He closed his eyes, pinching the bridge of his nose.
I'm an alpha. I have an alpha nose. Get up.
She stood before she even realized she was obeying and twisted her face into something like a wince.
Sorry, Professor.
He closed his eyes tighter, pinching the bridge of his nose harder. And then he was walking to the window, yanking it open.
Go around the dorm and come in through the front again. It will look like you walked down from the trail.
She glanced at the storm outside.
You couldn't make it a little less torrential, could you?
He gave her a flat look.
You teleported into my lap while I was video calling my girlfriend and then put your scent on my desk,
he said tonelessly.
Trust me when I say the storm is the safer option for you right now.
Should I?
She chewed on her lip,
knowing somewhere in the back of her mind that this was going to be a painfully awkward memory in the morning when she was more sober.
Like, clean your desk or something?
He stepped forward, and she backed hastily toward the window. Without saying anything more, he kept advancing, and she kept retreating until she was hanging half out of the window. He set his hands against the sill either side of her, leaning forward until she was an inch from tumbling out.
"Fuck's sake,"
he grumbled, looping an arm around her waist. He lifted her, his other arm slipping beneath her legs. He held her gently, despite his rough voice, and leaned out of the window, dropping the arm from beneath her legs. Her bare feet hit the muddy ground, and he carefully withdrew his other arm, waiting until he was sure that she wouldn't fall over.
"Hurry up," he snapped, "before you catch a cold."
"It's not even that cold."
He had already shut the window. She glanced up at the sky with a frown on her face, blinking against the heavy droplets of water. The storm seemed agitated, just like Easton. She hurried around to the front of the dorm and knocked on the door. Theodore opened it a few seconds later, the look of concern on his face switching to something like exasperation as he eyed her.
"I thought you used the opportunity to run home," he said. "I was just about to check dorm O."
Damn it! Why didn't she think of that? The other alphas spilled into the hallway, but it was Killian who stepped around Theodore and picked her up.
"Let's get you cleaned up without muddying the carpets, hey?"
He had his arms looped around her, lifting her feet several inches from the ground, and while she was grateful that he hadn't picked her up any other way that might have flashed the other alphas, she was still feeling how much the movement had lifted her dress to the tops of her thighs.
"Want some clothes to change into?"
he asked as he walked past the others, completely ignoring them.
"Kill!"
Theodore's voice was a harsh bark. It was enough to have Killian stopping in his tracks and looking back.
"What? Let her shower on her own, at least?"
Killian chuckled, his eyes drifting down to meet hers.
"Why?"
he asked, mischief sparking in his yellow-green depths.
"Nothing we haven't done before."
He pushed into his room and had the decency to wait until the door was closed before he started laughing. He carried her into the bathroom and set her down on the tiles, backing out immediately despite his teasing in the hallway.
"Help yourself to any clothes," he suggested. "I'll just be outside."
He opened the door to his room, revealing Nico, his fist already raised to knock.
"Oh."
Nico looked from Killian to her.
"You were kidding. Are you sure?"
Killian sounded like he was trying to hold back another laugh. Even Isabel tried to bite back a smile. Killian's mischievousness was just too infectious. Nico didn't seem to think so. He ignored Killian's response, turning his attention to her.
"Let's go."
It took her a few long seconds of blinking back at him to realize what he was talking about. And then it dawned on her.
"When I call on you next time, you need to drop everything. If you try to ignore me or get out of this, I'll turn up wherever you are, pick you up, and carry you here myself."
Well, fuck. Chapter 11. And the Asshole is Back. Nico watched as it took the Sigma a little too long to figure out what he was talking about. He completely ignored the way Killian was blinking at him in confusion.
"I can't,"
Carter said, holding herself in the bathroom doorway.
"I'm a little inebriated."
He dragged his eyes down to her muddy calves.
"Clean your feet and come."
"I'm getting really sick of you alphas ordering me around,"
she grumbled, stepping away from the doorway.
The shower turned on and Killian waved a hand in front of Nico's face. What?
Killian asked.
"Initiation."
Nico gave him a tight smile.
They all knew about the initiation tasks Oscar had demanded they give her. Realization lit in Killian's eyes along with a spark of curiosity.
"Can I watch?"
he whispered as the water turned off.
Nico laughed. I don't think so. She can barely get it right without an audience.
Because you're twice my size.
Isabel sniffed in disdain, coming out of the bathroom. She was a little bit adorable when she was drunk, with just enough fire to raise the hackles of every alpha in her vicinity. Nico pulled out the sandals he had stuffed into his back pocket, tossing them to the floor at her feet. Let's go. She mimicked him beneath her breath, and he chewed on his lip to keep the amused smile at bay. Just as bad as Easton, she continued, grumbling like she was too drunk to realize they could hear her. What did Mickey do? Killian caught the back of her dress before she left the room. Pulled my hair, she pouted. Pushed me under his desk, dropped me out a window.
That's going to need unpacking, Nico noted. But later. Let's go, before everyone gets out of Mickey's office.
Carter nodded, following behind him as he took off down the hallway. Killian was headed straight to Mikkel's office, probably hoping to catch an explanation for whatever Carter was talking about. They headed into the rain, and he shrugged off his jacket, holding it out for her.
Can't we wait until I'm sober, or it isn't raining?
She complained, pulling the jacket on and tugging the hood up. She completely disappeared inside it.
If you're going to drink and let down your guard around dangerous people, then no,
he returned. He couldn't stand the thought of how vulnerable she was all the time. Half of it was because she was his mate, and unlike the other alphas, he actually did believe that mates were destined. It didn't mean that he was ever going to accept her, that anything would ever happen between them. If it was completely within his control, she would spend the rest of her life never learning of the connection between them. It was just how it had to be. He was the first of his parents' children, and they had made their expectations of him known since he was old enough to understand what they were talking about. He was an alpha, with an ability he could easily hide. That made him popular and non-threatening. He was a definite shoo-in for Ironside, which meant, at the very least, he could send back money every month, and at the very most, he would become an icon. He had a chance to raise his culture, his family, his heritage out from the ditch it had been shoved into. There was a reason gifted from other countries fled to America, begging for refuge in the settlements. Japan didn't have an Ironside. All they had were Akuma, malevolent fire spirits who they believed were infecting humans and turning them into, well, him. He wasn't naive enough to think that becoming an icon would change his country's perspective on the gifted. Instead, he was banking on their greed. It was America's greed that saw to the safety and limited rights of the gifted, and where America led, the rest of the world at least considered following, even if only for a moment.
You're a talkative one, aren't you?
Carter spoke up behind him, following his hurried footsteps through the rain. She almost had to run to keep up with him, but he considered that her warm-up, so he didn't slow down.
What would you like me to talk about?
He asked, trying not to sound like a total dick, like he didn't want to talk to her at all. He wasn't a total dick, but he also didn't really want to chit-chat with the Sigma. She was trouble. She never did what anyone expected.
Why are you actually forcing me to do training right now? Killian wasn't serious, you know. Well, not about showering with me that time, anyway.
He almost stumbled.
You're a very talkative drunk.
I seem to be getting drunker. I think it's the mate bond. It's making everything wonky, you know? It teleported me all wrong, and now it's making me sloshed.
Unfortunately, he did know. She had 10 mates, and at least 8 of them had been drinking. He pulled his phone out as they pushed into the fitness center, opening the group chat.
Nico. Stop drinking. You're affecting her somehow.
Theodore.
I already stopped.
Killian.
Stopped a while ago.
Elijah.
Barely even started.
Kian.
Where are you? I'm not drinking.
Nico, training. Is anyone drinking? Moses, guilty.
Oscar,
guilty. And not stopping.
Nico,
I need her conscious, asshat.
Theodore,
the fuck for?
Oscar,
come here and call me an asshat again. Bring the Sigma. Two birds, one stone.
Mikkel, admin.
She is not your toy, Oscar.
Oscar,
are you sure? Because she looks exactly like this toy I had as a kid.
He sent through a picture of a stuffed rabbit.
Nico rolled his eyes, tucking his phone away and ignoring all the incoming message vibrations. Oh well, he tried.
Isabel narrowed her eyes at the bunching muscles beneath Nico's soaked t-shirt as he pushed into the same training room as before. Seriously, she said as she shook wet strands of hair out of her eyes. Why tonight?
Didn't you need a break?
He avoided looking at her.
An escape?
That doesn't mean I wanted to be beaten up, she huffed.
I'll walk you back to your dorm after we're done.
He dangled the offer before her tantalizingly.
And deal with Theo and Killian so you don't have to.
Why? She squinted at him, shrugging out of his oversized jacket. Do you have a hero complex or something?
I have manners.
He frowned back at her.
If you don't want to be there, you shouldn't have to be there.
It's not that I don't want to be there, she hedged, kicking off her sandals. I am trying to move there, after all.
Liar.
He said it so casually, reminding her of the first highlight Ironside had featured of him. They had called him a human lie detector, saying that his alpha abilities were the sharpest they had ever seen. Nico himself had told her that he was stronger, faster than most alphas. How's your sense of smell? She asked, her face scrunching up in worry.
Fine.
He quirked a brow, waiting for her to elaborate. It was on the tip of her tongue to warn him that she still wasn't wearing underwear, her mistake with Easton still fresh and traumatizing, but the alcohol clouding her judgment was making it hard to decide if it was more or less embarrassing to talk about it, so she eventually just shrugged and slipped past the ropes, waiting for him in the middle of the mats. Nico walked back to the door, his pace calm and measured. He flicked the lights, dousing the room in darkness.
I don't want to blindfold you again,
he explained, somehow finding his way over to the ropes. He ducked beneath them, his outline barely visible, and stopped before her. She waited until her eyes adjusted to the dark. I can still see you, she pointed out.
Barely.
You still don't look anything like the guy who attacked me.
You still haven't learned to use your imagination.
His hands landed on her shoulders. She pushed them off. He let out a sound of mild amusement, his hands flashing back into place faster than she could react. One second, he was holding her by the shoulders. The next, she was on her back, the breath knocked out of her. He held her down lazily, easily, counting to three, and then he released her, pulling her back up to her feet.
Are you trying?
He asked, curling behind her. He knocked her legs out from beneath her, and she tried to grab onto him, to pull him down with her, but he had already slipped away.
Yes,
she groaned, when he didn't even bother to pin her down again. I've just had a really tough day, and I feel like my limbs aren't cooperating with my brain anymore.
Focus more on the tough day, less on the limb-to-brain cooperation.
She tried to do as he said, dredging up thoughts of the text messages she had yet to deal with and the initiation task Moses had demanded of her. He was asking her to choose between herself and another person, to be the selfless Sigma she thought she was supposed to be, or something else, the kind of person who could dish out her own justice and claim what she wanted, uncaring of who she hurt in the process.
Nico sent her sprawling again, and she managed to catch a hold of his shirt this time,
so she only landed on her knees before pulling herself up again.
"What happened?"
he asked, sending her down again twice as hard. She wheezed, holding her stomach.
"Just wondering if I have a dark side or not," she panted out, as he held her down with a foot against her arm.
He picked her up again.
"Must be a small dark side, like the size of a freckle or something."
"No."
She bent over, still clutching her stomach, and he gave her a minute to regroup.
"I slapped Moses today. Made him bleed. Was badass."
She wheezed out a pained breath between each statement.
"Okay,"
he allowed.
"The size of a cookie, then."
"Stop making my dark side sound cute."
She suddenly straightened and tried to throw a clumsy jab at him. Even in the darkness, he seemed to see it coming from a mile away, and he easily caught her hand and then her other hand, twisting them behind her back.
"Ow, ow, ow!"
She tried to stomp on his foot and somehow managed to knee him in the groin instead, jolting him off balance. They went tumbling down, and she scrambled to take the upper hand, trying to pin his arms to the ground while she straddled his waist. He froze, his chest swelling beneath her, a faint vibration traveling from his chest right through to her core.
"Oh, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck."
"Carter,"
he growled her name.
"Does Gabriel still have your underwear?"
"It's not a power move if I ask for them back."
She was close enough to see his eyes close, like he was praying for patience.
"One," she whispered. "Two."
He flipped her. She had expected his competitive streak to kick in, but not quite in that way. Now he was weighing her into the mat, her hands captured the same way she had been holding his hips a heavy weight against hers. She tried to hook one of his legs by wrapping both of hers around it, but then she didn't know what to do. She only succeeded in pressing herself right against his thigh. He growled out a sound that was both displeasure and reprimand.
"That was a mistake,"
he swore roughly.
"I have to walk back into the dorm after this."
She didn't get a chance to reply, because her mind suddenly wavered, like how the world around her shifted before she teleported. Except this time, she didn't go anywhere. At least, not physically. But she was suddenly inside someone else's head, standing inside their body.
"Holy shit,"
she whispered, as the eyes that didn't belong to her looked over a woman suspended from the ceiling. The woman was petite, with a lithe and athletic body and darkly tanned skin. Her muscles strained as a strong male hand, belonging to the body she had just hijacked, reached out, spinning her in a slow circle. She wasn't entirely naked, but she might as well have been, with the delicate wisps of cream silk that bunched beneath the ropes crossing over her body in beautiful, terrifying patterns.
"What?"
Nico's voice sounded far away.
"Carter! Isabel! What the hell?"
Can't move,"
Isabel whispered back, like the person whose body she was inhabiting might be able to hear her.
"Why? What happened?"
Nico's hands were flying all over her body, but they only held a whisper of the pressure they would have in reality. There were other sensations more pressing to her in that moment, like the cock rising hard against the front of the pants the stranger was wearing, straining to escape, and the way his large hand cradled it as he looked over the woman, whose face she couldn't see, only her long auburn hair twisted into a plait. He squeezed himself, and a bolt of pleasure rippled through Isabel.
"I'm inside his head," she whispered shakily. "My mate."
It seemed like Nico had stopped touching her, but she wasn't sure. The stranger's hand released his cock and drifted over the gentle curve in the woman's spine before retreating. He dug into his pocket and pulled out his phone, reading the notification that popped up on the screen without opening it. Hidden member, Open group chat to view more. Blackout. The stranger stared at his phone a second longer before sliding it away. He stepped away from the woman, tugged the zipper on his pants up, and left the room, locking it behind him. The woman called out to him, but he was already far enough away that the sound was muffled. He kept his eyes firmly on the floor, not giving away any details until he was behind another door. He switched off the light, and that was that. She couldn't see anything. She could only hear his breath and feel the maelstrom of emotion that whipped around his chest. Trepidation, frustration, guilt.
Carter.
Nico's voice permeated through the darkness, calling her back.
What can you see?
She drifted back to herself, blinking up at Nico, who was bent over her, fingers on the pulse at her neck. Some of the tension seemed to leak out of his posture when their eyes connected in the dark. He went into a room and turned the light off, she said, scrambling upright and leaning closer to Nico so that she could whisper.
Right in the middle of fucking someone.
What?
Nico reared back, searching her face before leaning forward again.
Well, he hadn't really started yet, I think. He had her tied up and hanging from the roof. Oh my God, what if she was unconscious?
The words all ran out of her at once, and she tried to jump to her feet, but Nico caught her arm, dragging her back down to the mat.
I'm sure she was conscious,
he said dryly.
But he obviously knew you were in his head.
No, it was because of a weird text he got.
She frowned.
I don't know what I just saw. None of it makes sense. It was like a weird fever dream. Are weird fever dreams side effects?
I'll ask.
He tapped at his phone for a bit, the screen lighting up his face and showing how he chewed on his lip.
Elijah said yes.
He turned the screen off again.
And not even I'm comfortable leaving you alone anymore, so I'm taking you back to Dorm A.
She didn't even bother arguing. She mentally couldn't handle anything else for the night, so she just followed him meekly from the fitness center, burrowing into his jacket again until they arrived at the dorm. The overwhelming, heady feeling no longer permeated her brain, washed away by the rain, or whatever that weird vision had been. Nico led her into the dorm and then promptly disappeared, probably switching out his pants as quickly as possible. She surveyed the empty common room before padding over to Theodore's door and knocking softly. He opened it, stepping aside for her to enter, watching her warily.
What happened?
He asked. Maybe Nico had forewarned him, or maybe it was written all over her face.
Where do I start?
He closed the door, leaning back against it. He considered her quietly before opening his arms.
Start wherever and whenever you like. Come here.
She stepped into his warmth, twisting her arms around his muscled torso, brushing her nose against his clean shirt, inhaling his warm scent. One of his hands fell to her left shoulder, the other lightly cupping the back of her head. He wasn't really hugging her back, more like giving his hands somewhere to rest. She could feel the questions burning from his chest to hers, his impatience battering against her despite the way he held his body deliberately relaxed against hers, allowing her to sink into his strong muscles.
Sorry for kissing you in the game.
She spoke against his shirt, hoping he wouldn't even hear her. Both of his hands twitched.
It was just a game.
Why do you never hug me back?
He huffed out an amused sound.
I'm hugging you back right now.
No, you're not.
She wiggled against him, drawing a quiet rumble from his chest. His arms suddenly banded across her back, pulling her off her feet and flush against him. He stepped toward the bathroom, planting her outside the shower.
I'm not Killian, he rumbled. You're going to need to wash yourself. But first, are you okay?
She sucked in a breath, then quickly told Theodore the events of her night,
skipping over the disturbing text messages she had received. She started with teleporting to Easton's lap and ended with seeing her mate and his girlfriend? It didn't hit her until she was saying it out loud. Her mate had a girlfriend. Or at least he was sexually active. Or just really into people swinging from the ceiling? She didn't understand what the weird text was about. Maybe it was a settlement thing. Maybe the ceiling swinging was a settlement thing, too. Theodore's emotions seemed to run the entire gambit from amused to disturbed. His hands had landed on her shoulders at some point, his thumbs rubbing a comforting pattern over her collarbone. It was past midnight, and she had a full day of classes in the morning. But her night wasn't done yet. "I'm sorry you're going through this." Theodore's thumb stopped stroking as he considered her with a heavy expression.
"But you aren't going through it alone. What can I do to make it easier?"
She smiled and slipped her arms around his waist, hugging him tightly even though he kept his hands on her shoulders, fingers pinching in. He hummed, the sound emanating deeply from his chest before he gently peeled her off, softening the action with one of his wide, sunny smiles.
"You could sleep in your own bed," she said. "That would make me feel better."
"I can't."
He chewed on his lower lip, the movement making her focus on his mouth a little too hard.
"I meant by yourself," she quickly corrected. "I'll go sleep in the common room."
He considered it, albeit unhappily. It came as a surprise to her that she had any kind of power over Theodore.
"Please,"
she hedged, ducking to catch his eye.
"Go to Killian,"
he expelled on a hard breath.
"But..."
He disappeared from the bathroom, returning with a long-sleeved t-shirt, a hoodie, a pair of boxers, and a pair of drawstring sweats. He dropped the bundle onto the counter.
"Wear these, just in case. Wait."
He ducked out again and then dumped a pair of socks onto the pile.
"Theo, I'll overheat."
He cut her a look, his brows lowering.
"I don't need to sleep in my bed, but I need to feel like there's someone nearby to protect you."
What did that have to do with her overheating?
"Okay."
She forced out a smile, watching him relax slightly.
"Thanks."
He left the bathroom again, shutting the door behind him this time, and she turned on the shower, pulling out her phone to consult the messages she had gotten earlier. It seemed the sender had grown frustrated at her lack of response. "Unknown. You can't ignore me, Sigma. Unknown. I have nothing left to lose. Unknown. Don't test me. I will turn it all into the officials. Unknown. One of those alphas went psychotic on the rooftop, didn't they? Which means Professor Easton isn't the only one with an illegal ability. But Easton tried to cover it all up. Unknown. And then there's you, lying about how you entered the death phase. Unknown. Were you and one of the alphas trying to force a bond? Was it Theodore? Unknown. It didn't really work out, did it?" She shook her head, scrolling through the messages with dread sinking lower and lower through her stomach. "Isabel, who is this?" She quickly put herself through a scalding shower, tapping her phone screen as she hastily dried herself off. "Unknown. Your new master." She battled the urge to throw her phone against the wall. "Isabel, cut to the chase. Tell me what you want." "Unknown. There's a secret club for students to be mentored on the Icon track. Almost every winning Icon was a member, but they don't snitch. I want to know everything. What it's called, where they hold their meetings, how to get invited." She wanted to scoff and ask why they hadn't chosen any other student to blackmail for information,
but the answer was surprisingly obvious. Her father was a winning icon. Isabel, how long do I have? Unknown.
They won't make it easy, so I'll give you until the start of summer break, and then your secrets are public. Don't test me, Carter. I really don't have anything to lose. And remember, one word to the Alphas and this game is over, and all your lives are ruined. Play nice now.
And this could officially go down as one of the weirdest days she had ever been through since starting at Ironside. She slipped back through Theodore's room to the hallway, earning herself a smirk from the Alpha reclining against the headboard of his bed, as she almost tripped over the miles of soft cotton he had insisted she disappear into. When she reached the hallway, she ignored Killian's door, tapping lightly against Moses's instead. Almost too lightly, but he must have heard, because it opened a few moments later.
Carter.
He leaned against the door jamb, crossing his arms.
Sleeping over again, are we?
Haven't done much sleeping. She hugged her torso, looking up and down the corridor before settling her gaze at his feet.
I need more time. No.
I don't know how to ruin someone's life in a single night. He stepped back, kicking the door wide, and she hesitated before stepping lightly into the room. He nudged the door shut and then flicked on a lamp before sitting on the edge of his rumpled sheets.
Were you asleep?
She leaned against the back of the door. He ran a hand through his tangled dark hair, eyes dragging over her clothes like he was trying to find her inside them.
Was trying to be asleep? Why the fuck are you wearing practically everything Theo owns?
Honestly, she held up one of her palms, the sleeve hanging down over her fingers. I have no idea. We made a deal. He would sleep in his own bed if I went in with Killian, who is probably already asleep, so I'm probably going to feel like an asshole either way.
Moses rolled his eyes. Something tells me he'll survive.
He looked down at his hand, smoothing it distractedly over his thigh.
I'm sorry for being a dick earlier.
Which earlier? She squinted at him, catching the small twitch of a smile that he beat back.
Just the last time, on the rooftop. The thing with Wallace, it's a sore point for all of us.
It's assault, she dared, softening a little when it seemed like Moses wasn't about to come for her throat again. Attempted rape. You don't need to make excuses or explain. You should be angry. His eyes flashed, that dark storm shifting into something heavier as he chewed on his lip, considering her.
It might seem like I'm torturing you, but I've accepted that you'll be moving here. We all have.
Sato? She asked, feeling her own lips pull up as he flashed her a wry grin.
It's our own fault, Oscar included. We can't exactly blame you.
How? She reared back, confused and a little astounded. That didn't sound like a sentence that would ever come out of Moses Kane's mouth.
We've been fucking with the cameras since we got here, covering up for me, for Theo, for all sorts of things.
Like Easton. What's that got to do with me? She asked softly, scared that too much input from her would remind this version of Moses that the other version of Moses wasn't anywhere near this forthcoming, and also hated her.
The officials think we're wigging out the electronics.
He looked torn between annoyance and amusement.
Too many Alphas in one place. They think our energy is too strong. And they think, like most of the rest of the world, that the demure, blank slate power of a Sigma might just be the fix to their Alpha problems. They want to put you in here to even us all out. I'm sure if you weren't enrolled, they would have pulled a Sigma from one of the settlements to pose as a cleaner and, you know...
He watched her carefully before continuing,
"Be our house slave and regulate our emotions."
She slackened against the door, letting loose a weak laugh.
I've been trying so hard for nothing.
Not for nothing, he shrugged. The officials like their puppets to dance. If you slacken off now, they'll just find another way to pull your strings. You and us? That's what the people want to see. They like the scrappy little Sigma who thinks she can get in with the Alphas. And they like wondering if we're going to let you in, or if we're just fucking with you.
I would also like to know that, she deadpanned.
Who hasn't been clear? He challenged, raising an eyebrow. I want you gone. Sato wants you gone. Nico wants you gone. Elijah and Gabriel like puzzles, but they get bored quickly. For every person Kian interacts with regularly, that's another person added to his psychic register, and he already has 9 housemates. He doesn't have the mental capacity for you. And Killian and Theo? If it were up to them, you would already be living here, earning a punishment from the officials for not playing their little game.
Well, when he put it that way, I guess that's pretty clear. She tried not to sound disappointed, but it was harder to hear from Moses that he wanted her gone when he wasn't scowling at her or threatening her.
Anyway, Moses rubbed his shoulder. I didn't give you that task just to be an ass. You've already proved you can keep a secret, but you'll need more than that for us to trust you. Can you stand up for yourself? Will you stand up for your friends? Can you be ruthless? Can you fight? Will you pull your weight?
She frowned at him. By dishing out your version of justice? He licked his lips, like he could taste her trembling moral high ground. Like he could devour her and the shaky ground she stood on with a whispered bribe. Like he thought she was just as corrupt as he was.
There's no justice for gifted.
He leaned back on his hands, his legs parting wider, his head cocking to the side, his posture slouching. He was tired.
There's especially no justice for Sigmas. You want to run with us? Learn to make karma happen your own way. Dorm A is where good girls go to die.
And the asshole is back. Fine, she sighed, thinking about the messages on her phone. Maybe Moses was right. She was being too weak. Her blackmailer hadn't bothered with any of the Alphas, even though the video incriminated Easton the most. They had gone straight to her. But I need more time.
I'll give you until the end of the year.
He flopped onto his mattress, stretching one leg out and bending the other. His hand rested over his stomach, where his shirt had risen a few inches with his movement, showing a hint of the tanned muscles she had witnessed earlier.
That's one more term,
he said as she opened the door, like she didn't already know. Chapter 12, Where Good Girls Go to Die. Killian was an angel most of the time, with gentle touches, hair as soft as down, and a protective streak that was somehow less like the overbearing aggression she was used to associating with the word alpha, and more like a warm hug. But that was when he was awake. After awkwardly tapping on his shoulder while she stood by his bed like a creeper, he rolled toward her, shoving his face into her stomach, low on her stomach. He pushed at her clothes, like he was trying to find an inch of skin, and she didn't even know if he succeeded or not, because when he released a deep, rattling groan, the sound shooting through the room, her brain turned to mush. He had her underneath him in a second. Off, he grumbled, trying to get all the material out of his way. Shit. She was swimming in Theodore's clothes. Maybe he thought she was Theodore. Killian! She gripped his shoulders, her nails digging into the warm, exposed silk of his skin. He wasn't even wearing a shirt. His head lifted from the crook of her neck, his eyes narrowing sleepily on her face.
Off, he repeated. You'll overheat and die.
Oh, I thought you were...
He tore off her pants, socks, and then wrangled her out of the hoodie, stripping her with hasty, deft hands until all she had left was the long-sleeved shirt and Theodore's boxers. He pulled the blankets up to her chin and dragged her into his arms, holding her head against his chest.
"Sleep,"
he muttered. It seemed like an impossible command, except that with the bare covering of clothes between them, his smell was permeating the cocoon he had made with the blankets. He smelled like a garden, sweet, fresh, warm. It was like curling up beneath a bergamot tree, safely tucked away from the buzzing heat, tantalizing fruit swaying comfortingly above as the gentlest breeze stroked against her skin. It was like drinking too much wine and collapsing into a cloud, and he knew it. He made a soft, buzzing sound in his throat, like a hum that traveled to his chest. And she was done for. Asleep in 3 seconds flat. When she finally woke up, it was with a hammer of panic in her chest that quickly faded into confusion. Her limbs were languid, the sheets tangled about her legs, sunshine slanting across her skin from the window. Wait, sunshine? She was always up before the sun. Seconds away from panicking again, she was sidetracked by a tray of food set up beside the bed. Coffee, just the way she liked it. Juice, bagels, fruit, pastries. She sat up, staring around the empty room. Killian was gone, but his scent remained, a faint echo of what it had been the night before. When she reached for the coffee, she found a note beneath the mug. "Eat something more than a protein bar." She was pretty sure Killian had also turned off her alarm, and she fell back against the pillows, picking her phone up off the tray. She hadn't missed any classes, but she had missed all her scheduled time in the practice rooms. Unfortunately, she had also just had the best sleep of her entire miserable life, so it was hard to be mad about it. She wanted to bask in the fully rested feeling for a moment longer. So she crossed her legs, reached for a bagel, and pulled the latest episode of the Ironside show up on her phone, propping it against the tray as she ate her breakfast. It was hard to return to her own dorm after practice that night. It seemed so cold and inhospitable, like an abandoned viper's den. Empty and undisturbed, but with a lingering threat that harm could slither beneath the door at any moment. She avoided it as long as possible, locking herself away in Eve's room as Eve picked through her hoard of snacks, chatting all the way through Monday's episode. Eve only grew quiet or pensive when Isabel or one of the alphas featured on screen. It was rarely ever Isabel alone, and they had stopped trying to speculate as to her relationships with the alphas. It was now public knowledge that she was trying to get into Dorm A. The speculation was more to do with whether she would succeed or not, and which pairing would prove most entertaining if she did succeed.
"Will it be Carter and Sato?"
Ed Jones's voice teased her through the speakers.
"So much tension!"
"Everyone's terrified of Sato."
Jack didn't sound convinced.
"We could get that contact if we put anyone in a room with him."
"But it's the focus,"
Ed cackled. It was practically gleeful.
"The way he watches her. I think he's planning something."
"Should we warn her?"
Jack joked.
"Oh, I think our adorable Sigma has well and truly clued on,"
Ed said. "Their adorable Sigma? What the fuck?"
"How about Theodore, then, the fan favorite?"
"I don't think I can bear to watch that Shakespearean tragedy,"
Jack groaned out.
"The fans will overthrow the government if we break Theodore Kane's heart."
"That poll was rigged."
"What poll?" Isabel asked beneath her breath, interrupting the show. "Can Carter and Kane be just friends?" Eve answered with an eye roll.
It was a landslide, no, by the way.
What about the other dark horses?
Jack was propositioning.
We barely got anything interesting out of them until Carter came into the picture and started stirring up trouble in Dorm A. Now we're seeing a whole new side of Sado, Reed, Spade, and the other Kane twin. Moses hasn't given any indication of interest since the Valentine's Day party, but Reed or Spade could be interesting.
Ed continued to discuss which Alpha-Sigma pairing would be the most entertaining, even when the images on screen switched to the fifth-year antics on Ironside Row.
I vote Killian,
Eve spoke around the stem of a Twizzler.
Oh my God, same.
Isabel fell back against the bed, staring at the ceiling.
I think I'm addicted to his scent. I smell it everywhere I go.
Eve stopped chewing, her eyes widening.
What?
Isabel glanced over, confused at the blank look of shock on Eve's face. What did I say?
You mean like his deodorant, right?
Her eyes grew wider, almost like a warning.
Yes,
Isabel sat up straight.
Obviously.
Eve let